The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Good evening and welcome to the Hoosier Huddle Podcast. I'm your host, Sammy Jacobs. Along with us is TJ Inman as well to join us after Indiana's disappointing 24-0 loss to Penn State Nittany Lions. Indiana is 2-3 heading into their open week. All three losses have come against current top five teams in the AP, which I will go on my schedule rant as well, TJ. But it was the first time Indiana had been shut out since October of 2000 when they lost to Michigan 58-0. So it had been a long time since that had happened. So it was kind of a bit of a wake-up call, TJ. What were your feelings on Saturday?
Resignation? I mean, it was kind of weird because it was definitely not like the Iowa game where IU got punched in the mouth right away. And it was kind of a question of, man, how bad is this going to get? The Hoosiers handled the first, initial punch from that atmosphere. They did not let the game get away from them. They stuck in there. And I thought the defense was playing pretty well. In a tough environment against a good offense. But it became very apparent very quickly that the offense was unlikely to do much of anything. And I think for me, it was when they failed to score after the Raheem Lane interception set them up at the 13-yard line, I think it was. It became pretty clear, like, look, if you can't get points out of that, how are you going to hang around in this atmosphere? And to the credit of the defense, they kept battling. They kept IU somewhat within touch, but they never threatened because of a just completely anemic offensive performance. And it really left – there were questions going into this, and there have been all year, about the play of the offensive line and about the overall creativity and scheme of the offense. And I think that leaving that contest, the questions about the creativity and the scheme and the long-term viability of an offense led by Nick Sheridan and Michael Penix that clearly has not been up to standards. The long-term viability of that, I think, is ringing louder than ever. My overall feeling was one that Indiana will not be able to compete in the Big Ten East with an offense like this. And unless dramatic changes occur over the next 2 weeks, which the bye week comes at an incredibly good time for IU. They desperately need this this week off to rest up and prepare. If drastic changes are not taken within these 2 weeks to really take a look in the mirror and figure out what they need to do differently on that side of the ball, IU's going to have a hard time winning any more games this season.
I agree. It's I think it was a wake-up call to where exactly IU is this season. Post-game, Micah McFadden and Cam Jones said that, the two words that they used, two phrases that they used were to look ourselves in the mirror, and the defense played outstanding. They were without Tylan Mullen all game. He was a late scratch prior to the game. They lost Reese Taylor about halfway through. They lost Raheem Lane. Michael McFadden had gone out a couple of times with it looked like a stinger and things like that. So the defense battled. They held on to that late fourth and goal at the one. They stuffed Penn State there, which shows you that the defense still has fight. And that's what you want to see. And if a team has fight, you have a chance. And once that fight goes, you have no chance. So it's still there. We'll see how long it lasts. Going into Michigan State's now the biggest game, probably the Tom Allen era. But let's continue on Penn State for a minute. You mentioned the offense. It was totally anemic. It's the first shutout since 2000, so 21 years, almost 21 years to date that happened. It, you know, maybe Michael Penix's injury, and Tom Allen came out today and said it's week to week with an AC joint injury. Maybe this is a blessing in disguise. It'll force their hand to play Tuttle, which when Tuttle came in, the offense looked a lot better. And there were things that the offense were doing that they never did with Michael Penix. And it, you know, Jack Tuttle ran the ball a couple of times when guys couldn't get open and got 8, 9, 10 yards at a time. He made a beautiful back throw, shoulder throw to Ty Freifogel, who made a nice catch down there and things like that. So there's, you know, I've been saying that Tuttle probably after the Iowa game probably should have started the rest of the year, or at least started against Idaho and you let Mike figure it out. I don't know if he was mentally ready or physically ready to play. They mentioned it on the TV broadcast that, you know, his knee was hurting and things like that. And then, you know, late there in the, I guess, the second half, he gets hurt. Tuttle comes in. The offense starts to move the ball. He had one bad interception where it looked like the guy ran the wrong route. And he threw a duck up there and is picked off. And that, I mean, that was all she wrote anyway. It was probably over before then, but anytime you can't score, your defense, you can't have negative points as an offense. So you can't win 0 to -3. But the defense gave that offense a chance to win, and the offense hung them out to dry. And you got to look at it, and Nick Sheridan and Darren Hiller have to look each other in the face and look at look in the mirror at themselves as well and say, hey, are we doing the best we can to get this offense going? Because I don't think that this offensive line is untalented. I don't know if those talents are being drawn out in development and those things. We've all know the recruiting rankings on these offensive linemen. A lot of people wanted Matt Bedford. Caleb Jones has some talent, but, you know, they said he lost a ton of weight. He still can't move and things like that. You have Dylan Powell, who's, you know, a grad transfer from Stanford, who's played a lot of football, and he's not a slouch. So, you know, what gives? And it all points down to a coaching issue. Whether that's in practice, getting the best out of your guys, maybe a talent evaluation. They were all hyped up about Luke Haggard saying that he has NFL feet and things like that. But this offensive line, you know, and maybe the offensive line gives Nick Sheridan a little bit more slack. And I know I've been a big Sheridan defender. I've seen him call great games. It just has been few and far between. But as Kevin Wilson always said, you can't call what you can't block. And maybe that's an issue too, but they got to get it figured out because it's do or die time. You have to beat Michigan State, or else this season's going to go off the rails, way off the rails. Because you're looking at after Michigan State, you get Ohio State, and then you get you have to go to Maryland. And if you lose to Michigan State, you're looking at 2-5. You already saw Tim Baldwin go to the transfer portal. In this day and age, you know, 2-5, people check out. There's some guys who have some NFL futures that you don't really want to risk injury for a team that might not go to a bowl game and things like that. So if you could get to 3-3 after Michigan State, you know, your goals change a little bit. You're not in play for a Big Ten title. You're not in play for a Big Ten East title. You're playing for you know, you'll win a trophy game if you beat Michigan State. You still got Purdue on the schedule. You're playing for a bowl game, and Indiana has to win a bowl game. So I remember preseason, all these people said all these things about, well, the next step is beating Ohio State. And we pumped the brakes on it, TJ. The next step is not – they got to win a bowl game. And this is, you know, Indiana's three losses came against top five teams, which is why you don't schedule Cincinnati and you don't schedule on the road at Western Kentucky. And Cincinnati, you know, I don't care who I was talking to post-game. They said, well, you don't know what Cincinnati's going to be. When IU scheduled Cincinnati in 2014, they had won if you include 2014, they had won like 33 games in 4 years or something insane like that. They had won 28 games in 3 years. So they were averaging 8, 9, almost 10 wins a year for 3 years in the Big East. The Big East dissolved. They moved on, and now they're back again. So, like, what with the 9-game conference schedule, you have to schedule smarter. And IU fans get caught up in, well, we don't want to see them play Idaho and, you know, Eastern Kentucky State and, you know, whatever, Hamburger University. But guess what? You're not there to watch Hamburger University. You're there to watch IU. And if you're going to complain that IU is 2-3 against the hardest schedule in the country, then guess what? You're going to have to play an easier schedule. And you can't complain about – you can't have your cake and eat it too. It's one or the other. You either want to play a hard schedule or you want to complain that you're 2-3 and things like that. But going back to the offense, it's got to change. Your wide receivers have to get open. I thought they did better with Tuttle in the game and things like that. So that's my rant on the Penn State performance. It was ugly. It was frustrating. And it was, you know, maybe the last straw of the Michael Penix starting era of 2021. We'll see what happens. They said it's week to week. AC joints are tricky. But it made a tough decision, probably a little bit easier for Tom Allen. And they hitched their wagon to Michael Penix. Now he's hurt again. And you feel badly for Penix. His body has failed him. And we've talked about that. And you feel bad for the kid. You don't want anybody to get hurt, but he probably should have been riding the pine after the Cincinnati game at the very latest. But they went down to Western Kentucky. They liked what they saw. He played well, and they gave it another shot at Penn State. It's been three games against three pretty good teams in Idaho. It's patterns are now habits. And so in my opinion, it's time to make a change. What's your opinion on the quarterback, on the quarterback situation, even though it's probably a moot point and Jack Little is going to be starting for the foreseeable future?
Yeah. So we don't know how much of the offensive inability, which, you know, let's look at a few of the standout numbers, or not standout, but the ones that jump out off the screen at you. The rushing attempts versus the passing attempts. Indiana, in an effort to get balance, I guess, has run the ball 181 times and has thrown it 180. Okay, that's balance, but they are running it for 3.38 yards a carry. If you are running it for 3.38 yards a carry, you shouldn't be running the ball as many times as IU is trying to. And the number of first down runs up the middle that we have seen that go for 1 or 2 yards and put IU behind sequence is infuriating. And I don't know where the mandate for that is coming from, but that has to change. And it doesn't matter who's at quarterback for that problem. That has to change. Another issue is Indiana, while attempting 180 passes, has 95 completions. That's just a tick over 50%, and that's not good enough. It's just not. And again, that comes back to scheme. That comes back to accuracy from the quarterback. And then the third point that has stuck out to me is just a anecdotal one from watching the games against Cincinnati and against Penn State. Desmond Ridder and Sean Clifford are not speed merchants at quarterback. They're not Lamar Jackson. Neither one of those guys is going to kill you with their legs. However, both of them made a number of plays by extending the play with their legs and either picking up a critical first down by running for 7 or 8 yards or extending the play and then making a throw down the field that got a critical first down or a score. It happened numerous times against IU's defense, and that's not the fault of IU's defense more times than not. That is a perk of having a quarterback that can do those things. And Indiana does not. Michael Penix does not trust his legs or his body for understandable reasons. This is not to criticize Michael Penix or his toughness in any way, shape, or form. But he does not trust his body because of the injuries he's been through. And it might be a case where his body's no longer capable of making those types of plays. Either way, it's an element that is absent IU's offense, and it hamstrings the entire operation, especially when you have an offensive line that is struggling. What's one thing that can help a struggling offensive line? A quick passing game.
A new offensive line coach?
Well, sure. But right now, a quick passing game and a quarterback that can extend plays with his legs or pick up first downs on 3rd and 6, and you can call a play to get the quarterback outside the pocket and stretch the defense. And IU can't do that with Michael Penix. So to address your original question of what do I make of the quarterback situation, I don't know how much of the offensive struggles are on Michael Penix, how much of it is on Darren Hiller and the offensive line, how much of it is on Nick Sheridan and the offensive coordinator position and who's calling the plays, and how much of it is on the receivers that struggle to get separation and have way too many drops, way too many drops. I mean, look, Ty Freifogel has been a very good Indiana player, but when you are looking at an All-American wide receiver, watch Jahan Dotson. Because Jahan Dotson is a legitimate NFL receiver. Indiana does not have that right now. And the pedigree and the numbers that we've seen put up by Ty Freifogel in years past, we are not seeing that player this year. He made some really big catches in the Western Kentucky game late, and that's great. That was needed and very well done. But by and large, we have not seen that player this campaign. So I don't know what percentage of blame goes to all of those areas. It clearly adds up all in one. The one change that you can make right now is switching at quarterback. And the injury causes this to happen. I don't see a way that Michael Penix plays against Michigan State with that AC joint. Jack Tuttle's going to get all the snaps with the first team here for the next 2 weeks. We are going to find out how much of a difference that makes. But just changing the quarterback is not going to magically fix things for this offense. It's got to be a combination of the quarterback change, so the personnel change, plus a willingness from Nick Sheridan and from Tom Allen to push for this, to get creative with their play calling, get creative with their schemes, figure out a way to get the ball in space with some different wide receivers, because right now Freifogel getting the majority of the targets from the wide receiver group isn't working. You got to stretch it to other guys, keep getting Peyton Hendershot involved, because I think Hendershot's had a pretty good campaign when he's been asked to do anything. Need to get more of that. And now you have to figure out a way to incorporate a quarterback run threat that worries the defense. Because so far, they've not had to worry about anything. IU can't beat a team over the top without DJ Matthews. The quarterback can't beat you with his legs because Penix could not or would not run. So what are you left with if you're a defensive coordinator? It's a very easy team to scheme against.
Yeah, and, you know, some of the blame, and I've been harsh on Freifogel and the wide receivers, some of the blame is Michael Penix just overthrowing guys. And guys who are open and making easy catches a lot tougher, or making tough catches just impossible. So maybe that changes. You saw it with the back shoulder throw from Tuttle, but you're right. The wide receivers need to make plays too. You saw a lot of drops early across the middle, and maybe that was zinging it in there from Michael Penix, but it's the whole offense has got to take these next 2 weeks and just revamp itself and figure it out. Because Jack Tuttle, you're right, he's probably, I would say he's 99.9% the starter against Michigan State, and probably I'd say 75% chance that he's the starter the rest of the season. So what I also want to see is how are they going to involve Donovan McCulley? You go back to that 4th-and-1 against Penn State, and that's a perfect situation to bring in a 6'4", 6'5 quarterback who can run and throw. Now, you wish he got into a game earlier so that he's not making his college debut in front of 105,000 screaming maniacs in blue and white. But, you know, instead of running it up the gut, which has done nothing, you could maybe do a dump pass, maybe do what Penn State did with Sean Clifford and extend the play and force somebody to make a decision to either guard the quarterback or guard the receiver and put some guys in some tough spots. So this is the time to open up the playbook a little bit or a lot, because what are you saving it for? If I'm Nick Sheridan, Darren Hill, I'm coaching for my job. Tom Allen cannot do what Coach Mallory did. Tom Allen cannot lose all this momentum just because he is loyal to his coaches. I get being loyal, but you're being loyal to a fault. Bill Mallory, along with other reasons in the drop-off and the drop in attendance, one of the reasons why his tenure at Indiana ended was because he did not get rid of George Ballou as the offensive coordinator. And Tom Allen, who everybody has said is the best IU coach since Coach Mal, might find a similar fate because of a stubbornness and a loyalty to a fault to a couple guys who everybody could see are some of the main reasons why this offense is not performing. And you saw what the offense could be under Kalen DeBoer, and it was beautifully called. And Nick Sheridan learned under him, and Kalen DeBoer gave Sheridan, IU, there is blessing over Sheridan and things like that. But, man, there was a time where I think it was 8 out of 9 first down plays were runs. And if you want to do that against Western Kentucky, great. Nobody's running against Penn State. Nope. I mean, unless you're a top five team with a great offensive line, you're probably not running for very many yards against Penn State. So what are you doing? You know, it's either Tom Allen has to figure out what this team is going to be and what this is, he wants the future of this program to be. Because he's not going anywhere, and unless IU fires him, I don't think that's an option right now. But you got to look at your offensive coordinator, and if Allen is holding him back, you got to take the reins off, because you had the most hyped IU team in my lifetime come out and fall flat on their faces for the better part of 5 weeks. And the fan base is getting frustrated, which is it's an easily frustrated fan base, which is also frustrating. But Tom, you gotta. Football is no longer you can hold people to 21 points and hope to win. And you have to be able to outscore people and move the ball and put the and get your defense off the field. Your defense cannot be on the field as long as IU's defense was against Penn State. You know, IU does have good depth on defense, and we saw that in the secondary. You were without an All-American, and you played pretty well. But nobody has the depth to be on the field for 75% of the time and survive. It's just not going to happen. So the offense has to do their part. And these next 2 weeks, I think, are a – it is a I'm trying to look for the right word. It's going to be a telling time for how the Tom Allen era is going to go at IU. You come out, you beat Michigan State. You go to Maryland probably at 3-4. If you beat the Terps, you're 4-4 coming home or going to Michigan. We'll see what they do there, but you're coming home. You should be 6-5 going to Purdue because Minnesota is not very good. And as improved as Rutgers is, this team should be able to beat Rutgers. They're more talented than Rutgers and they're more talented than Purdue. So what's the problem? The talent is there. It's a coaching issue and they have Tom Allen has to get the best out of his coaches who need to get the best out of their players because they've recruited well. Indiana's recruited as well as they ever have. So what gives? And it's player development or maybe it's evaluation. But you know, look, Graham Mertz is a 4-star and he stinks. So you know, maybe the evaluation process needs to be looked at again. But either way, it comes down to coaches. Players have to play well as well, but it comes down to coaches putting their players in the best position to be successful. And IU hasn't done that. And it has been frustrating for a lot of people. It's starting to get frustrating for me because it's the same thing over and over and over again. And it's driving people insane. It's got to change. And Nick Sheridan and Darren Hiller are coaching for their jobs. They're not going to make changes in season because if they had somebody who could coach on the offensive line, then this offensive line would not be this bad. So you're not going to promote from within because I don't think there's anybody there to do that. And you're not going to fire somebody and hire somebody in the span of 2 weeks. It's just not going to happen in midseason. And the same goes for the offensive play calling. There's nobody on this staff that has called plays either. So it's unless somebody has a totally drastic scheme, there's no point in making a change right now. So the Indiana's game plan has to be, we got to fix this and we got to fix it these next 2 weeks. Or the season's going down the drain and you might see more attrition because nobody wants to sit on a team that's 2-5 heading to Maryland. And you have some guys who have NFL futures who don't want to get hurt in a wasted year. And that's how college football is, unfortunately. Why are you going to mortgage your future? So a team could go 4-8 or 3-9. That's just society today. It's understandable. It stinks, but it's understandable. So Indiana has to have their, come to Jesus moment, so to speak. It's now or never against Michigan State. And I'll go out on a limb and say this is probably the biggest game in Tom Allen's tenure to this point. Because if you lose against Michigan State, things are going to hit the fan, not only with the fan base, but in the locker room. And you can't go to Maryland. You just can't go to Maryland at 2-5. There's no recovery. You have no margin for error. And if this team goes 5-7 or 4-8, it's a step back. It's recoverable. But for a fickle fan base who's so scared to go back to the bad old years of 2014. It's an absolute must win on October 16th at homecoming. Final thoughts on Penn State, TJ?
I think there were some bright spots from the defense. The biggest just throw your hands up moment was fourth down early in the game, and you try and beat Penn State with smash mouth football up the middle. It was as predictable as it was head scratching, and it was infuriating in the moment, and it still is right now, thinking back on it. I don't have a problem necessarily going for it. I would have kicked the field goal there, given, but me kicking the field goal is covered by what I knew the play call was going to be and what I felt the result was going to be. It was, well, I'd rather not get stuffed on a run up the middle and turn the ball over on down, so we might as well kick a field goal. And sure enough, go for it, get stuffed, don't get points, and the offense really never sniffed it again. So that was, unfortunately, it covers what was a good performance by the defense. I thought a lot of guys played really well. Unfortunately, there was more injuries to be worried about. It's a group that desperately needs this 2 weeks to heal up, while the offense desperately needs the 2 weeks to figure things out. Those that are throwing the entire squad under the bus and saying every single person, is under question here. Look, it's one team, and I get all that, one group and everything. But the defense, I don't think they need to spend these 2 weeks figuring anything out. You give up only 24 points to Penn State, and you should give yourself a pretty good chance to win the game. And that's, unfortunately, not what happened. You go against Cincinnati and have the performance that the defense did, I feel like you feel okay about, having a chance to win that game. But again, it doesn't matter because you're ultimately looking at wins and losses, but in evaluating and reviewing the overall squad, I think there's still a lot to like about the defense. They have to figure out, number one, who do they want to be as an offense with Jack Tuttle? Because you can't just say, okay, well, next man up, change quarterback, let's run everything the exact same. They're different quarterbacks. They have different skill sets. And what you're running before wasn't working much better than just rolling the ball out and saying, let's snap the ball and see what happens. And that's sarcasm, but you can't do any worse than 0 points. So what you were doing was having zero success, throw it all out, reset over these 2 weeks with your new personnel, which doesn't include DJ Matthews, does not include Michael Penix, does not include Tim Baldwin. You've got a new skill set or a new group of personnel. Figure out how best to utilize and who best to utilize, whether that's freshmen, they get a shot, I don't know. But you got 2 weeks to figure that out, and then you got 2 weeks to figure out how best to utilize that new personnel. And if you can't do that, then maybe somebody else should be getting a chance to do that. Because there's a ton of innovative offensive minds that are out there at all levels of football. And you brought up Kalen DeBoer. Kalen DeBoer absolutely gave his blessing to Nick Sheridan, and that's great. I have no doubt that he thinks highly of Nick Sheridan, and that's great. Kalen DeBoer and Nick Sheridan both know way more about football than I do. It'd be very interesting, though, if Cameron DeBoer would hire Nick Sheridan right now to call plays. And the answer is absolutely not. There's no way he would. And if it's not good enough for Fresno State, then why on earth should it be good enough for IU? And if things don't improve over the next several weeks, that's the question that Tom Allen is going to have to answer. And if he does not, you're right. We could see things deteriorate relatively quickly. Because if you have an offense that's incapable of threatening a defense, how long is it going to be before your defense loses heart? Because they know if we give up 10 points, we're not going to win this game. It becomes a very frustrating and dividing situation very quickly if you have one side of the ball completely incapable of holding up their end of the bargain. Now, what do I expect to happen? I do expect we are going to see a very different Indiana team on the 16th when they go against Michigan State, which, by the way, Michigan State plays at Rutgers. If they win that game, there is a very good likelihood that IU is playing another top 10 team.
You don't say.
It presents a great opportunity to right the ship. And I'm very anxious to see how this group responds.
Yeah, it's you're spot on everything. And I asked Tom Allen point blank on Saturday night after the game, why was the decision to not kick the field goal down 7-0? And why was it the decision to kick the field goal down 21-0? And his answer was he wanted to be aggressive. I get going for it. I do. I would have taken the 3 points to give yourself some momentum, give this defense a little bit of a break, and things like that.
Analytics would say that was the correct call to go for it. And again, I don't have a problem going for it on 4th-and-1 from that situation.
It's why are we running it up the middle?
Exactly. It's not the will we or won't we, it's the how are we going to that has been the problem in short yardage situations.
Yeah. And then not going for it late in the game. What's 3 points going to do? He just said it's to get points on the board, which means you don't want to get shut out. And it was the white flag to me. You had a better throw in the end zone, probably is a touchdown, and he probably should have held on to it. It was also pass interference on that throw as well. But
yeah.
How many times are you going to be in the red zone against Penn State, a Penn State defense, which is excellent, heading into their student section? Why not try and see what you could do on 4th-and-5 and try and get a first down or a touchdown? It's an excellent opportunity to practice something. And instead you get a field goal. You're the left side of the field goal block team gets absolutely obliterated. And the field goal gets blocked, and IU gets shut out anyway. So you're right. It was a total.
There's two fourth down plays, complete no-shows from the blocking and the offensive line unit. Complete no-shows on two key fourth down plays.
And you're better off putting a cone on it, because guess what? Defense might actually trip over a cone and fall down.
Emblematic of the larger issue there. And I understand it's a mindset, right? It's our guys against your guys. We're going to get that 1 yard. Well, we are tough. We want to establish our will against you and shove it down your throat and get that 1 yard and get that first down and then march into the end zone. And there's this attitude and this hope that, well, we want this to happen. And we're going to make it happen. Well, I want to be 7 foot tall and dunk a basketball and play in the NBA. It doesn't matter how hard I want to. I'm still short and unathletic as hell. And I'm not going to be able to dunk the ball anytime soon unless I'm playing on my kid's Nerf goal. It doesn't matter how bad you want it or hope that it happens. Statistics on your running all season, plus what we have all watched every single week, tells you that's not going to happen. It's not going to be successful. I don't care if you want it to happen. It's not going to be. Come up with a different play on fourth and short and try and make something happen outside of the tackle box. Get Peyton Hendershot on a three-yard release pattern and say, okay, our Peyton Hendershot tight end is going to beat your covering linebacker one-on-one. I like that matchup better than I do our offensive line is going to beat your, you know, four or five NFL guys in the future defensive front. Find the matchups that are advantageous to you and exploit those. That's the key. And right now, Indiana's offense is not finding any matchups that are advantageous to them. And look, if it's determined we don't have any advantageous matchups, well, then our recruiting is just not damn good enough. It's got to be one or the other.
The recruiting rankings are wrong because you could go out and find those matchups. And it's not like they're not there. Peyton Hendershot might be the best tight end in the Big Ten. He nearly had back-to-back 100-yard games, which would have been a first, I think, for a tight end in IU history.
On what, six or seven targets?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. It's not like we've got so many weapons that we're just having to spread the ball around. I mean, geez.
You have a running back who's good in space. You can't get him the ball in space on swing passes. There were things that they did against Western that they couldn't do against Penn, that they didn't even try against Penn State. When your game plan for Western Kentucky is more creative than your game plan for Penn State, you got problems. And that's what it was. And we'll talk next week on Monday. And we'll talk after the Michigan State game. But hopefully we're not as angry, or I mean, we'll be just as passionate, but it's this offense has got to change and something's got to give. Either you find a way to fix it or you get out of town. And that's a conversation that Tom Allen has to have in private with his coaches too. You have to pull him aside and say, you're coaching for your job, because this is, you're not going to be the reason that this team gets wrecked. You know, look, if you have an awesome offensive scheme and your players just can't execute it, or, you know, they're just not good enough, fine. You can figure it out. You can accept that. But if your players are good enough and not in positions to win, that's on the coaching staff and that's unacceptable. Look, you could look at Lane Kiffin down at Alabama this week. He's a damn good coach, and he knows how to put his players in advantageous, spots. Alabama's just better. You can live with that. If you play your A game and they're just better, fine. Tip your hat to them and go home. But when there are advantages that IU has against the defense and they don't use them, unacceptable. And it's going to cost somebody their job at the end of the year. Probably not Tom Allen, but definitely a coordinator and definitely an offensive line coach. But it also shortens the leash to Tom Allen a little bit, because you can't come back in 2022 unless something magical happens and this offense goes on and scores 40 points a game. And it was purely a quarterback issue that you go, these guys deserve to come back and have it be a competent decision. It just can't happen. There's no way forward, right? If the season ended right now, there's no way forward. Indiana has not scored a touchdown against a Big Ten opponent this year. And if that doesn't change against Michigan State, they've got issues. Like real issues. Anyway, we've gone over our rant, TJ, but thanks for joining us. A little football therapy is good for the soul. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Winning is better for the soul.
It is. Winning is better for the soul, but hey.
Good old complaint session's not bad either, though. So, yeah,
but much IU enjoyed. We could guarantee that IU football will not lose this week.
That's true. That's true. So. Enjoy that, everybody. I hope you have a good week, and we'll be back here Monday to preview Michigan State. What will be another tough test, but hopefully one that ends in a better result than what we've had thus far. So, again, everybody, don't lose the forest for the trees. IU football is still fun, and it's still in a much better shape than it has been in years past, but there's some things to figure out, and hopefully that's what happens over the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully that is the case, and hopefully we could get back on that IU could get back on track. You know, we could get back to talk about wins and potential bowl destinations and things like that. We'll be back next week. Enjoy the weekend of college football without IU football on. I know there's some good games this week as well. You got the Red River rivalry, some other games. Take a look around the conference, scout opponents, things like that. It's nice to enjoy a fall college football Saturday before it gets too cold outside and things like that. So thanks for joining us, TJ. Come back, everybody. HoosierHuddle.com. We'll have all the updates on Michael Penix's health, transfer portal updates, and things like that. Follow us on Twitter at Hoosier_Huddle. If Facebook ever gets their stuff together, join us on Facebook and Instagram as well. It was an angry session today. So anyway, thanks for listening. Tune in next week as we preview Indiana's homecoming game against Michigan State that is on October 16th. Kicks off at noon, will be televised on Fox Sports 1. Have a great night.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.